Welcome to the European CME Forum podcast. European CME Forum is a not-for-profit organization that promotes multi-channel discussion on matters relating to European and global CME CBD. My name is Eugene Pozniak. I'm the program director of European CME Forum. In today's episode, I'm joined by Ron Murray, independent CME CBD consultant. Ron moderated a plenary session at the recent 14th annual European CME Forum, and he'll be preparing the upcoming meeting report for publication in JECME. The focus of today's episode is a roundup of 14 ECF and what we took away from this year's interactive studio hybrid CME Forum. Hello, Ron, and thank you for joining me for another episode of our podcast.
Good to be with you again, Eugene. How's things going?
Yeah, not bad, not bad. Thank you. No, it's great that we can get together so soon after 14 ECF. I thought it'd be just nice for us to revisit, have a chat, and just get some sort of initial thoughts that you may have after the meeting. Just as a quick introduction for our listeners about 14 ECF, this took place just a few weeks ago in early November. We did this as a virtual meeting. And, well, in fact, strictly speaking, it was a studio hybrid because there were a small number of us, from the faculty and the planners who met in Manchester, where we created a central studio. And this acted as the hub for the broadcast. So this year we used the Jam platform again. The meeting was broadcast in high definition. So again, we wanted to make it something else, try and get away from sort of the gloom of Zoom, as it were, try and make the meeting as interactive as possible and visually sort of more engaging for our delegates. So we used that for the live sessions and also the breakouts, but we did use a second platform as well. We came across a platform called GatherTown, which is quite big in the US. It gets rave reviews from the papers there, and various universities have used it as this sort of interactive platform. And it brings a little bit of fun to this sort of virtual world. So this, it's been described as sort of this Pac-Man-inspired metaverse type environment, you know, where people can meet, you can go and read materials, watch videos, and network. And we used that for the day zero meetings. So the day before the day one meetings, where we traditionally run special interest group meetings. You know, we had the meetings of the International Pharmaceutical Alliance for CME, the IPACME group, and also the Good CME Practice Group. They had a meeting each. And on this GatherTown, we used this as the meeting book area of the meeting. You know, we had posters presented there with videos from the authors. There were introduction videos for each of the sessions, as well as the traditional elevator pitches that we have for the breakout sessions. So, you know, in this area, it's possible to network. And it was just an interesting area where people could gather during the downtimes between the live sessions of the meeting itself. What else can I say? Well, it was the largest attendance of any forum to date. It's virtual, but it was significantly more than last year. So we had over 160 people were registered. And what was great to see is that each day we had over 100 people gathering for the meeting as it took place. There's lots of feedback and interaction. So from a technical side, you know, that's how we've sort of set it up. And it's great that, you know, during our COVID era, we're still able to meet. So that sort of sets the scene as to how the meeting took place. And of course, Ron, you were there, one of the team of 10 that was on site in that hotel room in Manchester. What did you think of this and the way the meeting was presented?
Well, in some ways, it seems like a long time ago, but I actually really enjoyed it. I have to say, I did find it a little bit intimidating at first, being sitting in front of the cameras set up there with bright light shining so that you really couldn't see what was going on behind the cameras. But first of all, one thing I'd like to say is that the comments you made there about the second platform called GatherTown, it was fascinating to see how people coped with that, because I think there was a few issues at first with folk just trying to get used to it, and then they did, and they just took it on board, and I think had a lot of fun with it and used it quite well to its potential. And one of the great things about that too was that, as you said, the what you call the day zero meetings, which previously had been, you know, there for the people who were members of the particular groups that used the day zero sessions, were open to everyone through the Gather platform. And I think that was in keeping with a lot of the, you know, the way that you have tried to promote the European CME Forum over the years, of being accessible and transparent. And that really added to that whole process this time, I think.
Yeah, no, and I was taken a little bit by surprise, because both these groups actually said, have these meetings open to everyone. And as you say, all registered participants could take place. And they were both very well attended. And just from the feedback from the leaders of the two meetings, they were delighted with the level of discussion they had and interaction. So that worked out really well. Maybe we should take that forward to the live meeting as well, have them as open meetings.
I think that would be a pretty good idea. But yeah, so again, the setup was fascinating. As you've alluded, it was a studio. It was what they called the green screen background thing. So the way that the delegates saw it through their computers was obviously different from what we saw in the studio itself, when everything was coordinated and collated. And having seen a few of the playbacks, it really looked fantastic. And the HD, the high definition, I think really added a lot to it. Now, the technical side of it was, you know, it took a little bit of getting used to. And this may be one of the things that of the lessons learned for going forward, that you can share with other providers and meeting organizers, that you have to get used to the technology, and you can't just do it going blind. You've got to practice. You've got to go in and make sure you know how to do things. And I think we pulled it off pretty well, as I said, from seeing the finished products. Some of it looked pretty slick. I honestly couldn't tell you how it was done, but you had some fantastic technical people there who were putting it all together. And obviously the equipment they had was top class.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was essential to have super fast internet connection so that they could send those images to the central command, wherever it was broadcast from. There were four main live sessions for the meeting, two on day one, two on day two. And so we had the four moderators, yeah, leaders. Ron, you led your own session as well. So each of these sessions had plenary parts that were led by the moderators who were in Manchester in the room. And as you say, yeah, it was really weird, because it was the green screen studio, as you say, with the bright lights at one end, the technicians in front of that, and I have to admit, I find it quite tough actually standing in front of a blank screen, the green screen, and trying to maintain eye contact with that camera lens was tough, because of course we saw the PowerPoint slides as they were going to one side, and it just felt sort of quite unnatural. And it wasn't till later on, you know, like in the second day, that we sort of appreciated this, and we were standing behind the camera while other people were presenting, just to try and give that sort of sense of live. Otherwise, yeah, we were just talking to inanimate pieces of equipment.
Well, yeah, and so hopefully when folks who are listening to this might go onto the European CME Forum site once everything's up there and have a look at what went on, they'll appreciate the technical skill of the folks behind the scene, and also the effort put in by the presenters, all of them, both those in the room and those who were coming in remotely, because it was quite a feat, and I know that we were all mentally exhausted at the end of it all.
It was quite trying. Yeah. And it just showed how important it is, as you're saying, to have those preparation calls, all the planning that went into each session. And I know you spoke with your panelists individually and as a group as well, even in the lead up to the session itself, just to make sure that people weren't sort of overlapping certain topics and that no one felt alone, deserted, maybe just abandoned. Because of course, yeah, if someone's not on site and we're joining a meeting through the traditional sort of Zoom type connection, so people sitting in their own homes, it's quite difficult to know how your own input fits in with the whole session. So it, and we were quite brutal with the timings and trying to keep it quite tight, so that and even so, each session was sort of 2.5 hours long. There's a lot going on, but yeah, I mean, you did a great job keeping things sort of ticking over with your session. Yeah, just making sure that all the topics were covered off and that the faculty were comfortable with the questions and the themes that you were covering, and also addressing the questions that came in from the participants.
Well, and yes, that was really part of it. I thought was indicative of, again, your ideas about interaction being one of the key components of the European CME Forum. And there was this immediate interaction through the questions that were being beamed up on the screens in front of us, so that we could respond to things in real time. Now, I confess, I had some issues being able to see that because of the bright lights. But you know, we had other bits of technology that allowed us to see it. You know, not sort of staring at the lights, but having an iPad in front of us so that we could read things off there. So yeah, that interaction was important. So this whole idea of a hybrid meeting, I think this was a really good example of what can be achieved. And, you know, I hate the expression, but, you know, it's like the new normal that we've been talking about for the last year and a half, 2 years. So as we move ahead, and we're all hoping that we're going to be able to go back to, you know, some situation where people are actually meeting in person in the same space. But I think there's still going to be room for some aspects of the hybrid activity that you put forward. So it may be that at the next meeting, you'll have some folks who will be able to access it remotely, but the majority being there actually on site. So yeah, I think there's some lessons to be learned, and it could be very useful going forward.
Sure, sure. Yeah, and just thinking about how we did this meeting and the questions that we asked the participants as well, you know, about how they're seeing 2022 by way of meetings. Will they be hybrid, in person, virtual? And just our own planning for 15 ECF in Barcelona. So between now and November, we've got to have the plans in place. Of course, as we discussed, we have to go ahead with an in-person meeting. But with this experience of the studio, so it's quite nice that the terminology that our technicians use, they called it a studio hybrid meeting. So it's a hybrid meeting where there are human beings in person on site. But primarily, it was the studio, and we were broadcasting out to a virtual audience, or majority virtual audience. But if we meet in person in Barcelona, and it's primarily an in-person meeting, but then also broadcasting out, I think the way that the equipment is arranged, and probably the visual aspects as well, because the experience for the people in the room itself to be looking at the speakers, the faculty, against a green screen actually would be pretty tough, I think. So we'd have to think about how the staging is actually presented for the in-person people, but then deciding also how we interact with the virtual world and how it's broadcast.
Sure. Yeah, and I think it was useful to actually have the folks there in person who were going to be moderating the main sessions that you talked about. And although I know that I perhaps slightly jokingly called it the Lawrence Sherman show, but it was fantastic to have a showman like Lawrence Sherman. And for folks who don't know, I mean, we know that Lawrence has been a professional presenter in his own right in the entertainment field for a long time. So it was good to have someone like that that could kind of keep us all on track to some extent. But, you know, it was a great learning experience for myself, I say, as a participant and as, you know, a member of the faculty, because I've never, well, I've been on TV before, but not done something like that, where it was live and, you know, you were relying on other people too, but you had to be sure that you could sort of guide the process within the constraints of the technology.
Yeah, no, and it really highlights the importance of faculty training. You know, we spend years and years actually giving presentations in person from a stage, and the skills are built up over the years. But of course, yeah, in front of a screen, it does help. Yeah, Lawrence's background as a stand-up comedian while he was getting through college, and then his work on the radio, and also he's very media savvy, which did show, because you know, the rest of us, even with our own training, we've only had a few events, really a few activities or whatever we've done on Zoom during the pandemic. It takes a lot to learn these skills and to look slick. So the technology helped, the familiarity with the equipment helped, having a tight program as well. And hopefully the participants found it valuable and more entertaining and visually engaging than other meetings.
And I think when folks come to sort of review those who were in attendance and those who kind of look at the materials that are going to be available on the website later on, come to see this whole the concept this time of being the three-legged stool. And it seemed to me that the three legs, and you might want to just mention what they were in a second, but they seemed to build on each other as the meeting went on, in terms of the main sessions and the discussions with the panels there. It did seem to flow well, I thought, in that coming from the kind of the rules and regulations to the design side of it, to the whole idea of, you know, what does independence mean and what are some of the issues involved in funding the enterprise we're all involved in. I think it gelled really well.
Yeah, it worked out well in the end. And three of those sessions, as you said, we sort of split down the CME enterprise by these three themes. Yeah, we called them legs. The participants could vote as well how well they thought that each leg was served. But the first one was on rules and regulations. The second one was educational design and outcomes. And the third one on funding and independence. And of course, there's a lot of overlap between each of these areas. But to have the main plenary actually focused on those things, brought out some interesting themes. And before the meeting, actually, we were a bit concerned because, of course, everything we've been doing recently as CME Forum is really educational design and outcomes. You know, if we're looking at the special collections for JECME to the most popular sessions at meetings, just looking at the percentage of the meetings, it's about how to make the actual education higher quality, more impactful, with better outcomes, etc. And the other themes seem to have been sort of peripheral to that, but actually I think our concerns were sort of put to bed really on the day itself, because as the conversation rolled out, we gave each theme a good airing and it focused people's minds very nicely in those sessions.
And, you know, and then the workshops that were going on in between these sessions, I think, really added to it as well. And they were linked now. There were some familiar topics, obviously, but I think they're important that they're still aired. And it was good to have the breadth of topics in there and the cosmopolitan aspect of the faculty who were involved in the workshops from around the world. It really has become a truly international program. And in a way, the fact that you had this kind of virtual studio hybrid setup did allow for the folks from different parts of the world to engage at the same time. And I think in some ways that added to it, the fact that they're not just in the same room, they're all together. But you've got a chap coming in from Uruguay, you've got Lisa Sullivan coming in from Australia, and, you know, goodness knows what time of the day it was when she was doing it, because, you know, we had to take care of time zones, you know, and people from France, which, by the way, I bet you didn't realize that France has got the largest number of time zones in the world, the country of France, because it's so many territories and so on, and islands spread all over the world. So there's more time zones in France than there are in China, which has only got one.
Excellent. It was good to bring in people from around the world. So looking forward, I think, to include people who may not be able to get to Barcelona or wherever else we may have the meetings. I think that's going to be an important part of the meeting that really we can't get rid of.
I really did. I enjoyed that aspect of it, you know, being able to be there in real time with folk in USA and Canada, as I said, South America, all over Europe and Asia as well. So, yeah, that part of it, I find it exciting, because I'm a globalist. I love travel. I love interacting with people from other parts of the world. And, you know, this is a fantastic forum to do it. So I don't know, maybe we should, I know in when we're marketing the European CME Forum, we talk about it being global. It's not just European, it just happens to be occurring in Europe, but the topics are applicable around the world. And so I think we've achieved, and mainly through you, a great deal of harmonization of our enterprise around the world.
No, it's fantastic to have the support that we have from the people in these areas. And in fact, just the topics that you've mentioned, or the people that you've mentioned, their involvement in the meeting, especially this year, something that we've been working at for a number of years now with CME Forum, is the case-based learning kind of thing, showing examples of best practice. You know, what does international collaboration look like? What does an international program look like? And we're constantly asked, please bring us examples. So it's lovely with Alvaro Margolis from Uruguay taking part in the workshop, and he's describing collaboration that he did with two universities in the US.
My old university being one of them.
Indeed, yes. Yeah, so we had University of Virginia and Cleveland Clinic and Uruguay exploring how they developed this collaboration, presenting it to our meeting, and also with Lisa's example, and that was truly global, you know, with European, North American, Australian involvement. They're showing how this works, and all the workshops, actually the majority this year were people submitting their ideas, and our panel chose the ones that we thought would be most suitable also for the platform, as well as the actual topics. And we should do a mixture next year, do some virtual, some in person, just so that we can get these global voices together.
Well, I mean, and that may also be appropriate for the poster sessions. I mean, we had a number of posters, and some of them I found fascinating, like the topics on micro learning and so on, and then sort of multiple support for activities. And perhaps at Barcelona, if there's, you know, a poster session there and we've got any of the authors there, we could even set it up with the Gather platform and have folks interacting with the authors, even if they're not physically there, as we did to some extent this time. But you obviously could have poster authors there in sessions to interact with the audience as they're describing the cases that they've been involved in and answering questions. So I think, again, what we're doing is learning from this process of how we might be able to apply it in the future.
Yes, actually, that's a great idea, Rob. I'm going to make a note of that. Let's do the posters next year, sort of a joint virtual as well as on site. We had seven posters this year, good spread of themes. I think we had nine in the past. So, you know, it's not that we get dozens of them, but right. they're excellent examples. And we started last year asking the poster authors to give a video introduction description of their posters. Last year, it was quite a struggle to get people to record videos. This year, actually, we used Storyvine, so this automatic way of recording not just descriptions of the posters, but the elevator pitches for the workshop people, and also introductions for the sessions themselves. We had a lot of video content, short introductions to what people were doing. I had three poster authors coming back saying that they loved the format. They had more interaction than they would do on site, because people were just turning up with their little Pac-Man characters, standing on, you know, in front of the poster, and the authors were there so they could have their mini meetings, actually presenting their authors, answering questions, having good discussions. And there's space for sort of handouts. You can download the PDFs, and it's just really convenient. Yeah, more convenient than on site.
And perhaps we should you know, encourage folk to go and have a look at that particular platform. Other platforms are available, but you know, it was, and I think there's some interesting things when people on the platform were acting like people do in the real world, crowding around the doors of rooms and not letting folk go in. But in the platform, you had this wonderful opportunity to become a ghost and actually go through people into a room, which I thought was a fantastic aspect of it.
Yeah, yeah, it's nice, and the figures were cute. But the most important thing was that you could get to your destination and find the information that you're after, or take part in the meeting. So that seemed to work quite well. With the actual session itself, yeah, the workshops, just going back to the workshops for a moment, this we find a challenge each year, how long to dedicate to the workshop and how long to do the reflection. So we asked the workshop leaders to do the activity and then have a reflection session. This year, we allowed more time for that. So it was Lawrence interviewing each of the individual workshop leaders, and they had a good 15 minutes to report back. But how did you find that went?
Well, I think that's actually a better way to do it. And obviously, it's an issue in lots of meetings that, you know, there's often so many choices. You want to do everything. You'd like to go to, you know, three of the four workshops available, but, you know, you just can't do it. So the ability to have, you know, participate in one that you're, and I was lucky to be able to jump in and out of some, because I was, you know, hovering from the outside to be able to kind of get information to write up the report later on. But yeah, I think that's a good way to do it. In that, you know, people can have their own live interaction in a workshop that they're part of, that the one that they're most interested in at the time. But obviously, all the others have got interest for everyone too. So yeah, that mechanism of doing the reflection afterwards, so people can get a flavor of it, and then perhaps if there's something in the reflection that kind of jogs their memory or their interest, then they can follow up with the workshop leaders. And again, I think this is one of the wonderful things about the forum, is that people do make themselves accessible and available. So yeah, I like the way that was done.
Yeah, I will probably make the workshop slightly longer. I think that there was something we were concerned about, was the speed at which we were trying to run the meeting. So yeah, keep the reflections, but people were happier to spend a bit more time actually in those workshops. Mm-hmm. Overall, did you find that there were any sort of strong opinions that came out, any controversies or debates that immediately spring to mind? I know you're still going through all the recordings and, you know, for the report that you're generating, but anything or sort of on the content side that jumped out at you?
Well, I think there's an ongoing situation that we've discussed in previous forums that was there again this year. This whole concept of collaboration, and what does it really mean, and who can collaborate to provide the best aspect of CME CPD for the learners. And that was discussed a lot. And I think there was some there was some great progress that seemed to be there in terms of the possibilities of collaboration among providers, accreditors, industry, and even employers. The other thing that's come up a few times was this concept of the education for healthcare professionals that occurs in the workplace itself. And of course, there's lots of opportunities there, which hasn't necessarily had a kind of a framework in place to make it get labeled as what we all consider to be CME in the CPD arena. So yeah, that for me was one of the interesting things, and the openness of some of the representatives from industry about their willingness to collaborate in a progressive way to really help providers to do the best they can for their learners without necessarily imposing their ideas into the content. So I think that was refreshing for me.
Yeah, that's so true. With all these groups, I think, referring to industry and the IPACME group, the day zero meeting that they presented to all the participants, it was clear that there are a number of drug companies that have come together, in effect, a load of competitors, but all describing a common approach to CME and encouraging collaboration and best practice. It's all according to CME principles, but also talking about their own role in other areas of medical education. Mm-hmm. This was strong. And later on in the meeting, when we had, in fact, in your session, you had two people from industry giving advice on how to develop higher quality education, which would, of course, lead to more higher chances of getting funded by them. But there was some real good tidbits of information coming out from there. And also that was reflected in both the other sessions as well, that you can see that there is a cohesion of opinion from industry and the accreditors as well. Now, the work of the International Academy was coming through loud and strong. The standards are there with the various domains that have been worked out, and you can see there are groups of accreditors that are now looking at the quality of education coming from providers to be consistently of high quality and what's expected of educational programs when it comes to accreditation. That was really strong. We could see that actually something that we could work more on is the collaboration side of things, and maybe the other professions, interprofessional education. We probably light on the ground this year, but we found quite tough to bring additional voices to the meeting already. But that's something that's important to include in future.
And I think then what that kind of begs the question a little bit of, do we see the way forward for more collaboration among providers in Europe, in actually being able to work together, not necessarily, not see themselves as competitors, but having a common goal and be able to put on educational activities collectively? It may just be two together. We've seen that pharmaceutical companies will do joint grant applications, for example. In fact, the people who were represented in the session that I was moderating, their companies actually do have a portal where they can have grants given out as a collaboration between the two companies. So it seems to me that there's room there for the providers to kind of look at themselves and say, can we actually work together and put on some activities that are going to be useful with appropriate outcomes and funded through collaboration among the funders too. So I think there's definitely there's some fantastic opportunities there.
Sure. And the accreditors would love it as well to see multiple supported activities and not worrying about potential bias. They tend to unpick the programs which are single supported. So to have collaborations in place is a great way to go forward. So for people listening in, you can hear our thinking. If you've got good examples, please keep a lookout for 15ECF. We are looking for interesting examples that that can be showcased at the meeting next November.
And I know they are happening, because I've been on advisory panels for giving out grants, and there's been collaborative efforts come in the proposals among hospitals, for example, and clinics in Europe, and interprofessional stuff going on too. It's there. If we can see more of that, and if they're folks who want to come in and talk about what they're doing at 15ECF, I think that would be fantastic.
Great. Great, indeed. And of course, the very first session, because we've been talking about really the three legs and the day zero meeting, but the meeting started with session one, which was dedicated to JECMI and the special collection that we've been running this year, which is on digitization of education in the health professions. And this was led by Reinhard Griebenow and Peter Henning, who were joint guest editors of this special collection. And the journals had a bumper submission rate, really, with well over 30 submissions, 28 or 27 articles, letters, manuscripts have been accepted. And it sort of clogged up the system a little bit for us at the journal, but they're now being published. So at least half of them are published as of today. So hopefully by the time people are listening to this podcast, we're getting to all 20, however many are going to be published to be there. So that's, you know, jecmi.org to actually see this. And Peter and Reinhardt interviewed a number of the authors for that opening session. And we had a good overview of the kind of work that people have been doing. So during, that is mostly as a response to COVID, so much of education, so much of everything from a clinical care to our own daily lives has gone online. So this was a lovely cross-section of digitization.
Well, and actually, in some ways, I know that you said it's been, you know, a bit of a logjam getting these things published, but it's been nice in a way for them to be trickling out so that you're not just having all 30 at once to try and go through. So as they've been coming out, I've been looking at them, really read them and see them. And that's actually been quite a nice way to see it. And also people can go back again once everything's up on the website and see there was one of the workshops on the topic as well that Reinhardt was involved in too, on the digital literacy. And I think that's another another very important aspect of the world we're in at the moment that was highlighted in that workshop, and people can go and check in that, and it'll also be covered in the report that will be appearing in the journal in the new year.
Sure, yeah, we had so many, because of the volume of papers that came through, Reinhardt and Peter dedicated certain topics for the session one. And then there were two additional workshops as well. So as you said, Reinhardt led one on digital literacy, and then Peter led a topic on artificial intelligence. Well. Yeah. And that was excellent as well. He wrote a lovely summary that's there in the special collection on sort of the history of artificial intelligence. And there is a real evolution of this technology, and it's not so sort of space age, unbelievable, sort of incredible technology. But this AI now has real practical applications to everyday clinical care, which came out beautifully in that session.
Yeah, I think we've covered some exciting topical and relevant material in this particular meeting. And I think it all bodes well for next year. And I frankly can't wait until we're heading to sunny Barcelona.
That would be lovely, yeah. So the next steps, you're going to be working on this report. I would like to ask anyone listening, if you attended the meeting, do please complete the evaluation form. This is really important. Ron will be including the results of this in the report. And of course, we'll be using it in the planning for 15ECF as well. So go back to the last email you've received, click on the link, and please give us your feedback that way. If you didn't attend the meeting and you have some opinions on this, don't wait till the pre-meeting survey that will be launched in June next year. Drop one of us a line now, go through the website. There are ways of communicating with us, whether through, you know, even Twitter, LinkedIn, etc. We really want to keep our eye on the ball and make sure that the forum that we present is genuinely up to date. So stay in touch that way as well. The report should be published early next year. Then we should have all the special collection published from 2021 as well, and we'll be launching the 2022 special collection. The Good CME Practice Group actually did the webinar last week. Did you see that, Ron?
Yes, I wasn't able to participate, but yes, I know about it. And that was, you know, again, this other topic that's coming up again about independence.
Yeah. So it's really as a direct result of the session you led at 14 ECF, the Good CME Practice Group said, well, let's carry on. The recording is now available on gcmep.org, and GCMEP will carry on doing webcasts. So from the office perspective, you know, we've got plenty of things to be working on. And, you know, between now and November, when we should be meeting in person in Barcelona, or at least on the end of a computer screen.
I look forward to it.
Wonderful. Thanks very much for your time today, Ron. Take care.
You're very welcome. Take care.
That was Ron Murray, independent CME CPD consultant, joining me to discuss 14 ECF. If you attended the meeting, please complete the brief post-meeting survey and let us know your thoughts. As you will have seen during the meeting, your feedback is really important in our future planning. We've already started updating the webpage. You can find the posters, and we will continue to add presentations, videos, and reports, and other outputs from the meeting over the coming weeks. Registered participants will also have exclusive access to the recordings from the meeting sessions, which will be made live in December. Publications from the JECME 2021 Special Collection will also continue to be published throughout November and December, so keep an eye on the JECME webpage for these. Thank you for listening, and join us for more episodes as we explore all things CME CPD.